Stay in touch with us on Facebook and Instagram at Unique Yet Connected.
You are now listening to episode 35 of Unique Yet Connected podcast. The theme for this episode is Decode Your Codependency Level. Hello, brilliant souls in and around the world. Nolita Kozwa Fenton is my name. Dologaz is my clan name. And this is episode 35. A warm welcome to Unique Yet Connected podcast, where we treat our episodes as mini workshops so we can best share the wisdom of systemic family constellations. Thank you for joining our movement of translating this wisdom into a practical language that all of us can easily understand. Most importantly, implement in our daily lives. The theme for this episode is Decode Your Codependency Level. Remember, when you comment, ask questions, like, and share our content and links, you help us grow together. And there wouldn't be a podcast without you, myself, Kinga, Nick, the ones who came before us, and Bert Hellinger, the founder of the work that is most fulfilling for Kinga and I. And as always, Kinga is on the other side of the virtual. Hello, Kings.
Hello, Noli. Thank you. Hello, dear listeners and co-editors. Yes, dear listeners, keep sharing this knowledge because it can change lives for the better. Thank you for your huge contribution. You are our inspiration in building and opening up the theme about the laws of love and romantic relationship. Please continue to share your questions, comments, and insight on uniqueyetconnected@gmail.com and on WhatsApp 076-289-6670. Join our monthly virtual connection circle every last Tuesday evening of the month. To receive your link, subscribe on our website www.uniqueyetconnected.com or check for updates on our socials at uniqueyetconnected.
Or simply drop us a WhatsApp message so we can share the link with you. Our WhatsApp number again is 076-286-0070. Today, Kinga is taking us into the signs of a codependent behavior.
If someone attacks you, you will react by protecting yourself. You would have to be a robot not to react if someone angrily attacks you. This is not a sign of you taking on someone else's feeling and mood. How much do you let the feeling take you over, and how quickly do you balance back to your equilibrium determined by your codependency level? People can exhibit codependency in different ways and at varying levels. I'm going to read through the list of the signs of codependent behavior by Erica Swinley as an opening for this episode, and later we will go into them in detail. So you might recognize a little bit of yourself in all the criteria on the list, but it doesn't mean that you tick the box of a codependent person. A certain amount of discernment is called for while you are working with this list. Questions to be asked: how much of this point is actually talking about me? How much does it feel like a true statement about me? It is worthwhile to assess all the points by the criteria of whether this feels very much like me or a little bit like me or not like me at all. You can scale them between 1 and 10. 1 being not at all like me, and 10 exactly like me. You'll pause this podcast, this episode, and bring your notebook to start the work. This can give you a bird's eye view of what is really going on with you and codependency. What is your relationship with it? You will be able to see if you are extremely codependent in many areas, or if you are codependent in some parts of your life, but not in others. Let's look at a romantic relationship, because this is what we're talking about. Like, this is our main theme. If your partner is sad and it doesn't affect you at all, you must ask yourself if you are maybe the opposite of a codependent and too detached from your loved one. But if you become fully consumed by your partner's sadness, you make his story your story. you both are drowning in sadness, and there is no way you can be there as a support for your partner in his sadness. It is worthwhile to have a look what is really happening when we can't handle our partner's sadness because it makes us sad, and the feeling of sadness overwhelms our entire existence. An entirely different approach to our partner's sadness is that when our partner is sad, we want to be there for him or her in the sadness, even if we don't do anything to lift the sadness. We can't do anything, but we are willing to hold the space for the person we love and just to be there. So let's read through the list and some signs of the codependent behavior. This is quite a comprehensive list.
I like the idea of the list we can measure ourselves on. Okay, let me grab my pen and paper so that I can do it as we go along, maybe fill through the levels later. Let's see. Carry on, Kings.
Lacking boundaries between yourself and others. Blurring lines in relationships. You struggle to see where you end and the other person begins. Feeling low self-esteem. Feeling rejection and abandonment. Apologizing or accepting blame to avoid conflict. Being who someone else wants you to be. Ignoring your own needs. Putting other people's needs before your own. Anticipating and reacting to someone else's needs, which may be perceived accurately or not. Feeling like you have lost your sense of self. Needing to control, including making decisions for others or managing them. Doing things for people that make you feel uncomfortable just to make them happy. Taking on too much. Basing your mood on how someone else feels, not your own emotion. Resenting, not receiving appreciation for your action.
The list is indeed comprehensive, and I've recognized some of the codependent behaviors from the past version of me and quite a few that still exist in me. Let's start opening up lacking boundaries between yourself and others.
Lacking boundaries between yourself and others? I will start with a few questions. And while I'm asking the question, you can ask yourself the same question and measure them by the scale of 10 to 1, very much likely, likely, not likely at all. Do you often say yes when you actually want to say no and end up resenting the situation you have ended up in? Let's take a scenario where you just met your dream guy and he wants to take you out to do something that you dislike. For example, go to a pub and you say yes, even though you have a dislike for crowded places. A question you can ask yourself, why do I say yes when you want to say no to him? Is it possible that you are too scared that you will lose him because you don't enjoy exactly the same things like he does?
Yeah, some men and women do this, and I can say that we all know that fear of losing things, and you end up finding yourself pretending. So what can one do if they don't exactly enjoy the same thing with their partner? When does one start to create boundaries in their life, and at which stage of relationship development?
What can one do when you don't enjoy things with your partner? If you want to start to create healthy boundaries, you can start changing your attitude little by little. Start small. Do not do that one thing that you really dislike and enjoy. For a healthy and connected relationship, do make an effort to find things that you enjoy doing together, though, because experience created together can be a very strong bond in the relationship. When does one start to create boundaries in their life? At which stage of development? We as an individual start to create our separate identity and with it our boundaries at the toddler development stage. This stage happens between the ages of 9 months old and 3 years old. This stage is linked in with learning to become counter-dependent, separating yourself from mom. This is where we learn to say yes and say no. We learn about willpower, freedom, and danger. When it comes to danger, we instinctively learn what our mom is scared of and what she considers safe. Some of the things we don't want to do and we always end up saying no to actually being linked to generational negative experiences. This boundary of ours was created a long time ago and way before our time. For example, if someone has wronged in our family line, then the family is going to have a subconscious fear of water and we will be told that going into the water is dangerous.
Yes, that is so true. That makes so much sense about some of the generational fears. I actually relate with that. There are certain boundaries that are generational. Things like women don't do this and then it becomes a boundary in that family or society. You kind of take it on like that's it without any questions, and there's so many things that we've taken on without asking why or, where does this come from? I was actually saying to sister the other day, because of this work that we've been doing, that maybe we're actually not who we think we are right now. Maybe it's time to explore ourselves deeply. If it's the water example, that we're talking about, have you even tried going into the water or next to the water? Because some people don't even try, they just accept that this family doesn't go in the water or we are not allowed and they don't even know why. So yeah, maybe, there's a boundary to start somewhere.
When we work with long-standing boundaries, we have to be careful not to tear them down too fast. We are experimenting with them. What happens if I push this boundary of ours? What if I push another? Healthy boundaries are always there, but never rigid. From the other side, what happens when our boundaries are too loose? Your life is like a little boat on a stormy ocean, totally in the mercy of the waves coming from other people. The stronger the push from someone else, the more they intrude into personal place, and it feels like that we cannot do anything about it. What happens when our boundaries are too rigid? We lose the joy of life. Life is about experience. Growth happens through experimenting and experiencing different things. The rigid boundaries stop us from enjoying the natural flow of life. The rigid boundaries need to be gently stretched for joy to return into our life. So personally, me, I'm not comfortable getting into the water because my mom almost drowned. Interestingly, my brother has no problem getting in, but I do. To stress this limitation, I don't have to jump into the ocean right away, but I can start putting in my toes first. When we structure our limitations, we slowly gain confidence to change our relationship to them. We have a chance to create the experience that even though we pushed our boundaries and did more than what we were comfortable with, yet we are still okay.
Yeah, the water one is interesting because when we were young, we never went to the beach with our mom. We went with family, friends and relatives instead because she wouldn't go near, and she only started going when we were much older, just by the beachfront, sit on the bench. At least that's an improvement, she's pushed it a little bit. She can even sit at a restaurant by the beachfront. and enjoy lunch nowadays, being scared that the water will come to her and overwhelm her, because I think that was the fear.
I will use your little story, actually, because it's a good example of when, what do you do when two people get together and one loves the ocean and the other one doesn't? Codependency will say that we must do this together. I want to spend 5 hours by the ocean and my partner doesn't even want to come down to for a short term. So when this happens, you might even say that this partner is actually not the right partner for me. Not taking in consideration that our partner might be carrying a generational trauma about the ocean, and him not coming has nothing to do with his love towards us. If we want to save this relationship, we should look into why do I need my partner to enjoy exactly the same things like I do. There are another 19 hours in a day. Is that enough to be spent together? Is it enough to make sure that in those 19 hours you do allocate time that you spend together? Or all of your time should be spent together? In my opinion, what matters is that you do allocate some time to each other that is not related to your work, your children, your house, your relatives, your friends, or whatever else. This time is just for the two of you, and it is used to keep on getting to know each other more and more deeply.
I love that. I love your opinion. So I think it's helpful for the relationship. Let's open up blurring lines in relationships. You struggle to see where you end and the other person begins.
Do you worry about how your partner looks or behaves? Are you ashamed of her in front of other people or him? This means that you don't know where you finish and your partner starts.
You know, I love, because this is so familiar. What is usually the cause of such codependent behavior? Is it based on one's shame? Is it based on choosing someone who you're not completely satisfied with? What's going on there?
Shame is a secondary feeling. You are ashamed for being with someone that you believe will reflect badly on who the people think you are. The primary reason is not believing in your own worth separate from other people's opinion. This common belief of how your partner represents who you are is embedded so deeply in our society that people will troll other people about it. Pierce Brosnan, who played James Bond, so he's obviously good looking, and his wife were trolled by numerous people because they found his wife's body shape not suitable for him or for his status. The truth is that his first wife died, and then for a long time he didn't want to be with anyone until he met his current wife. They fell in love. Over the years, she happened to gain weight. People were mercilessly body shaming her. Then Pierce Brosnan came out and told everyone that it doesn't matter to him, so it shouldn't matter to them either, because she is the person who supported him through everything, the most precious person in his life, and they must stop harassing her. A, this is their relationship, and B, the wife's weight makes no difference in their relationship. In no way he expects her to be this or that. If she be 60 kilos or 300 kilos, it makes no difference to him. What makes a difference to him is what she is and who she is and all the support she has given him all these years, which he can never match in giving back from his side. So people go very far with how they expect their partner to be. This shame doesn't belong to our partner, but it belongs to us. It was created in the first place because we believe it reflects badly on us and negatively alters what people think about us. Our low self-esteem will force us to try to raise our value in other people's eyes by pleasing them with our choice of partner. Answering your second question, in this case, you are not choosing your partner for yourself, but to be admired or accepted by the society around you. Just leave it. Most of the time, you will not recognize that this is the reason behind your choice of partner, though. Like all codependency issues, it is based on you not having a strong and firm identity.
Wow. So that is what was going on with me. And it resonates because I really did care what people thought of me so much that that was at a particular point in my life. So it was a big thing. And thank you very much, Kings, for that clarity.
I said it feels like a low self-esteem. What is low self-esteem? It is when you base your value on an assumption of how other people see your value. Your self-worth might be based on beauty, prestige, or by excelling at something, your work or your study. One of the most typical signs of low self-worth is being extremely critical of others.
So you just said extremely critical. Is being less extremely critical not a typical sign then? I feel self-esteem can be very subtle, you know. It's not in your face kind of thing, you know, as a codependent behavior. What are some of the other typical signs of it?
I said extreme because you don't live in a bubble and have to be aware of the effects of your actions on other people. There is healthy criticism, or more like necessary evaluation of the things that you do. An assessment of the results of your action. This includes the results of my action on other people. Only very young children, narcissists, and sociopaths don't feel the necessity of this evaluation. You do have to be present and aware enough in your life to measure up your real value while not forgetting that the other people are just as valuable as you are. The extremity comes in by not looking at another person's merits, even where there was an instant liking to her or him, but looking for the faults. Extreme criticism means throwing stones without gathering the facts, not inquiring about another person's life, but assuming that they could do better. It is also about a lot of us made our looks such an important thing in life that we missed the opportunity to get to know who we really are. Some people base their value on beauty, some on leaving behind a legacy, some on how kind I am to other people, and some on how much I give back.
So everyone has their own concept of life and self.
Yes, and obviously when your self-worth is at the right place, you will try to do the best for your health, you try to study, you try to give back, and all of these things, but not in an obsessive way. Because you don't know who you are, the only way for you to get the sense of your identity is that you constantly compare yourself to other people. Being critical is just a way for you to come out better in a comparison, and with that, create a fragile, positive self-worth for yourself. As a result of this, you will find fault with every person you meet. When you meet a person, you focus on his faults and not on his merits. When you look at them and you feel that you are better off, and then you can say to yourself, that's okay. Even though I don't know who I am, even if it feels like I am insecure, but compared to this person, I am much better. I feel a little better about myself, even though inside I constantly feel better about.
Thank you, King, for that insight. And let's open up fearing rejection and abandonment. I so relate to this one, King.
When your self-esteem is low, you feel easily replaceable and discardable. You will spend enormous efforts to try to make the other believe that it is not true. But in your heart, there is a belief that the other person made a mistake choosing you and one day wake up to realize that he could get someone much better than you.
I knew you were going to come up with something that makes me think of something. So this is probably one of the common ones for most people who have been in romantic relationships. Like I said, I relate to it. And I always had this thing in my past marriage. We were in a relationship for a long time before we got married. and there was already so much going on with the relationship. My insecurity was constantly triggered. I had the thing that he is gonna go. I didn't feel secure after we got married. In fact, I think being married brought out the worst.
Yeah, there is another gem in the marriage bringing out the worst, but because you should feel secure when you get married, but sometimes it brings out, yes, being tied into maybe that I'm fully sure that I want this or I don't want it. And a lot of people choose to reject first in order not to be rejected. Fear of rejection is often the reason behind when someone chooses to have affairs.
So he used to say that I always say I'm going to leave. And I guess that was my way of rejecting first, because he would say your first instinct is always I'm leaving and you pack. And I have actually packed and left a few times. And that was one of the things I had to work with before meeting Caesar and before getting married to him. And I'm still working on it. Even when I finally agreed to get married to him, I had to be like, you know, how are you going to deal with the relationship in your past? You still have some work to do. So keep working on yourself. And hence this chapter of our podcast is my favorite, because it's giving me the opportunity to continue with the work.
Of course, in this podcast, we are not looking at your numerology numbers, but I can't help myself. And in brackets, I'm telling you that there is a 5 in the middle of your life path and 4 in your soul path. And 5 and 4 dynamic is to constantly question if I should stay or go. Have I overstayed my welcome or what I should have spent here? Or am I leaving too early? Am I leaving it too long or cutting it too short? Have my boundaries been kept or not? The 4 wants to stay, but 5 says this is really not okay and we must leave and start fresh. As it is in your life, boss, there is an urge to pursue a meaningful life. When the old foundation seems to be cracked, you are pushed not to base your life on a damaged foundation, and it creates the need to go. I have a friend with the same dynamics playing out in her chart, and she often finds herself at the airport asking herself, why I am here? What am I going to do when I get to my destination? There is a 4 and 5 playing with each other. I want to go through the pain of being left, so I rather leave on my turn. In my heart, I know that I am rejected because I am easily replaceable. Better to avoid being rejected by being the first stepping out of the relationship.
Yeah, Kings, oh my word. This is exactly what I did. You know, when I saw that the marriage was at the breaking point, I thought, let me be the first to leave. And I did, and it was easier than having him do it. So it had to look like it was my decision.
When you have worked through your limiting beliefs and your self-esteem is not slowly based on others' opinion of you anymore, then you start to develop a healthy self-esteem. Self-esteem that is coming from inside. The burdens of your life disappear because you realize that what was really being rejected by you was the real you inside you. When you don't know who you are and reject yourself, you say to yourself that I am not good enough. I cannot possibly ever be enough. I cannot possibly ever be the one someone wants. And for example, if you were a surprise baby, then there is a part of you that feels unwanted, and you carry this unwantedness in your life.
And on top of that, Kings, wow, I also looked different. So, yeah.
Our listeners don't know that you were a surprise baby. And because the unwantedness happened at the beginning of the pregnancy, when you were only just created, you will not know about this on a conscious level. It doesn't matter how much your parents love you when you come out, there is an original shock carried in your system. Actually, we saw it in your constellation about what was surrounding you while your parents were expecting you. We did a constellation about that. And there was an original shock defining your whole life up to this point. The constellations were the 9 months of pregnancy, or what was happening between your parents when you were created, are important because pregnancy is a fully codependent stage between mom and baby. All feelings of the mom are soaked up without limitations by the baby. The baby is like a sponge and almost fully one with mom.
Yes, I remember that shock. we'll talk about the shock some other time as well. Maybe another constellation there. Does this relate to children being sponges at that age because they are still codependent?
We are like sponges up to the age of 7 years old. It has to do with the way our brain operates at that stage. We take everything that we hear in the first 7 years of our life at face value. We do not debate or question anything at all. Even if the child seemingly keeps on asking why between the age of 3 and 6, they still take the parents' or the guardian's answer as the truth. Even though you didn't fully believe your mom was buying you a brother, you were not 100% sure that the story was not true. Whatever adults say, the small children, they believe it. If you tell them that you mustn't sit so long on the toilet because a snake will come up on it, it will result in the child being petrified of going to the toilet, and then suddenly you have a child on your hands who suffers from constipation. And a clueless adult will ask the child, what's wrong with you? Why don't you want to go to the toilet anymore?
Yes, wow. So we should be careful of what we say to children.
Yes, even if someone says it as a joke, it sticks. Parents don't think about this when they tease little children. They take pleasure in teasing them because they are so easy to be teased, because they believe everything adults.
Like how I shared in the last episode about my mom teasing me and it affected me. It stuck with me, you know. I must say this has been another eye-opening and intriguing episode. Once again, I reflected, things resonated with me, and I'm hoping you found your own moments that were just for you, dear listener, to shift and your lives to new levels and of being and of thinking. Please do share with us, you know, whatever comes up. And I know some of the listeners are starting to go to the first episode, the second, the third, the fourth. We still welcome all those comments and insights and questions. And yes, Kings, what's in the next episode?
Yes, we're nowhere near to finish with this list. So we are coming back to go into deeper into your list about codependency and the signs of codependency. If you feel like you are experiencing limiting patterns or relationship issues, or something in this episode triggered you and would like to have an individual session, book a family consultation session with us on our website, www.uniqueyetconnected.com. or on our socials, Facebook or Instagram. Our handle on both platforms is @uniqueyetconnected.
Thank you for listening to episode 35. And another big thank you to Nick Mons from That Guy Productions for making us sound fabulous and on point in every episode. Our next episode, episode 36, is in 2 weeks' time from now. Tune in on the 26th of November at 10 a.m. South African Standard Time. We're looking forward to hearing from you. Like our pages, and I've been seeing a lot of new likes on our Instagram page, and I'm like, yay, thank you. And on Facebook, and you do comment and like our posts, so we're very excited about that. So you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook @uniqueyetconnected. yet connected, unique spelled YOUNIQUE. Stay unique, stay connected, and remember, you are one of a kind, and we can only create a really meaningful podcast together. Siyabulela, khosonom. Till the next episode.
Thank you. Siyabulela.